The Taylor Marshall Show, Episode 4. Welcome to this episode of The Taylor Marshall Show. My name is Dr. Taylor Marshall, and this is the podcast for everyone who wants to take their faith to the next level. Today's show will help you become intellectually equipped and prepared to lead others with gentleness and compassion. You know, all the time I get asked, how do we help our friends, our family, our loved ones who have left the faith, who have left the church? A couple weekends ago, I was speaking at a conference, and in the talk, I mentioned the need and the pain that people experience when a loved one, a spouse, especially a child or a grandchild, leaves the faith. And I had a woman come up to me after the talk crying, and then a whole line of grandmothers and mothers with just really sad stories to share. And it got me thinking, you know, this is a great topic. People are hurting here, and this is something that we should address. So today, we're going to look at a four-part game plan for those of you who have loved ones or friends who have left the faith. These are not going to be foolproof, but I think they will be helpful in assessing the situation and to help those people we love. Before we do that, I'm really excited to announce a project that I've been working hard on for the last several weeks. And another request that I get often through email and Facebook goes something like this. Hey, I really want to take my faith to the next level. I want to study philosophy. I want to study theology, Latin, apologetics. What should I do? Should I move to another city and start a master's program in theology or philosophy? Should I do an online course like the Augustine Institute, which is a great program? Or should I, you know, move to a different city? Is there just a good book I can follow? What should I do? And, you know, for the longest time, I haven't had a good answer for that. And it is a problem. You know, there should be a way for people to learn more and to study philosophy and theology without paying the, you know, let's face it, really expensive cost of tuition that's required at most places. I did a little research. The average cost per course at conservative Catholic institutions or institutions in general, but places like Steubenville, Ave Maria, those kind of places, is, you know, about $2,000, $2,100 per course. And that can add up pretty quick. So what is the solution? Well, I put together an institute, and it'll be online courses. There'll be high-definition video, well done, with professional videographers, high-quality content, but it will be easy to understand, easy packaged. It'll be video, so you can watch it on your tablet, your laptop, even your mobile phone. All the courses will be downloadable in MP3 format, so you can put them on your iPhone, listen to them while you drive, while you're on the treadmill. And every month, I'll offer a new course. So the first course coming up will be a course on St. Thomas Aquinas. I did a survey, and that's what everybody voted for. That's the topic they wanted. So if you sign up, you'll get that course. And then the next month, there'll be a course probably on Mariology, the Blessed Virgin Mary. We'll do one on how to answer atheists and the new atheist. We'll do one on St. Augustine. We'll do one on St. Paul's epistles. And this will just go on month after month. And what I'm most excited about is how inexpensive this is going to be. So you'll be getting a college-level course. Now, you won't have any exams or papers. Just learn as you go. But you'll be getting college-level, graduate-level instruction, and the tuition is going to be $25 a month. So that's, you know, about 2% of what standard tuition is all over the country. And for a lot of people who have contacted me, they're in Nigeria, India, Northern Canada, Asia, island countries, there's just not an opportunity to move and go to a full-out university. And for some people, even if they could, financially and with a time commitment, it's not possible. So this is a great solution if you're one of those people who wants to get advanced education, advanced instruction in important topics that relate to philosophy and theology, faithful to the magisterium, for literally 2% or less of what it would cost. Literally less than one textbook, or, you know, less than a couple lattes or four lattes a month, you can be getting instruction. So I think it's going to be a great resource. I'm excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun for me. And we're going to limit it originally because I don't want it to be overwhelming. We'll also have an online forum, which I'll be answering questions in, and we'll have a monthly live Q&A, which you'll be able to participate if you're a member. And we're going to open registration at the beginning of October. And I think we're going to limit it originally to just 500 spots. So if you're interested in this, mark that on your calendar at the beginning of October. I'll be announcing it on the blog, taylormarshall.com. If this is something interesting to you, you're going to want to get it at the beginning, because there's 2,000 people who have officially asked for this, and we have about 9,000 email subscribers and 100,000 unique visitors every month. So I know these 500 spots are going to fill really quick. So if you're interested in this, just keep an eye on it on the website. And when we open the registration, try to be one of the first ones. And it's going to be great. I think also the first week, I'll probably offer a discount to the first wave of people in. So I'll let them, I'm thinking about maybe $20 per month, knocking $5 off, because I want this to be affordable and accessible to everyone who's interested. So the Institute, right now we're calling it just the Taylor Marshall Institute. We don't have a better name. All the cool names that have to do with Thomas Aquinas have been taken. So it'll be the Taylor Marshall Institute for now. And we'll have 500 spots opening up in October, and we'll begin the courses. It'll be a lot of fun. All right, so let's get on with the podcast. And the tip of the week is email restriction. Last week in the podcast, we talked about phone or mobile device restriction, how phones are always interrupting us. Another important discipline is restricting email time. Let me be vulnerable here. I can get addicted to email. I love checking email. My emails come to my phone. Every single comment that people make on the blog comes to me as an email. So I'm literally getting new little interesting things all day long. And my temptation is to pull it out of my pocket wherever I am, if I'm in line or even, you know, with other people, which is rude, or when I'm in the bathroom, whenever, and check the email. So what I need to do, and I'm not always successful at this, but this is my discipline, is I restrict email time. And what I've done for the past year or so is only allow myself 1 hour of email time. 1 hour. Now, for a lot of people, they think that's impossible. You can't do that. Let me tell you, if you limit it, and there was a time when I was only doing like 2 or 3 hours per week. Now, if you limit it, what's going to happen is you're not going to answer a lot of superfluous emails. A lot of emails don't need to be answered. I know we think that's rude, but it's the truth. Also, a lot of emails are a waste of time. For example, an email will say, hey, what do you want to do next week? Or let's get together. Where do you want to meet? Next email. What time? What you need to do is write one email. When you're limited on time, you'll learn how to do this. Hey, let's get together next week. I'd love to meet you at Chili's at noon on Tuesday. Let me know if that works for you. Thanks. God bless. So when you learn and discipline yourself to keep emails short and to the point, you can do massive amounts of email. You know, there are some days when I'm able to plow through 200 emails, 300 emails. I just go through them in my mail client. And if I don't do that, all day long, I'll be looking at emails, and it will be draining my mental energy, and it'll be draining the precious time I have to do very important tasks. All right, so that's the tip. Restrict your email. Make it a discipline. Put it on your calendar every day, recurring. This is my email time, and then stick to it. I guarantee you'll start being more productive. Okay, so let's go to our feature segment. So your son comes home from college, and he says, "Mom, Dad, I'm not going to church anymore. I took a philosophy 101 course. I took an anthropology course. And I've realized that religion is just the opium of the masses, and that there are other ways to account for human life, evolution, chance, social constructs, historical constructs. And I think I'm going to be able to live my life this way. And I'm sorry if I've disappointed you, but I just can't keep on with the faith. I just don't believe. I don't have faith anymore." What do you do when your son or daughter, your grandson, your granddaughter comes home from college or at any age and says, "I just don't believe anymore. I don't have faith"? This is true in my own family. I've experienced it very painful because we love these people so much. The number one thing in our lives is Jesus Christ, the truth, the Catholic faith. That's what we're passionate about. That's what we live. And to see someone that we love so dearly not experience that same joy, that same consolation, that same love from God is painful. And of course, there's also all the fears about the afterlife and everything that goes along with it. And also the destructive behavior that sometimes a life without God or without meaning can bring with it. So how do we react to our family, our friends, our coworkers who have left the faith? You know, we'll call them in this episode the leavers, those who leave. I just put up a blog post this week which shows that 80% of young people who are cradle Catholics, who are raised Catholic, 80%, by their time they're 23, they have left the church. Let me repeat that. 80% of cradle Catholics leave the church by the time they're 23. That's the current statistic. 8 out of 10. 4 out of 5. That's bad news. And that means the chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you know a young person who has made that transition. The first thing you need to realize is there's nothing that you can do in that moment to change their mind. I've never heard of one case where someone had this really smart, philosophical, theological explanation or apologetic defense that they were able to lay out in that moment, and the person turns on a dime. He says, "You're right. You just convinced me back." All right. This is going to take time. Conversions take time. So take a deep breath. And the first step, we're going to go through four today. The first one is to listen more than you speak. And this is true in every area of our life, but especially when it comes to people who have left the faith. James chapter 1, verse 19 is a verse that we should all know. And it says, "Know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger." So quick to hear, slow to speak. You've probably heard that before. It comes from the Bible, James chapter 1, verse 19. Another good one is Proverbs 15:1. I didn't do a Proverbs of the day because I'm going to have a lot of Proverbs in this segment. Proverbs 15:1. "A soft answer turns away wrath, but a hard word stirs up anger." So if you give a soft answer, you turn away wrath. But if you give a harsh word immediately, you stir up anger. And that's not good. You don't want to do that. All right, Proverbs 18:2. "A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion." All right, so you don't want to have a harsh word. You don't want to express your opinions right away. You want to listen. The best thing to say would be something like this: "Well, how did you come to that conclusion? is there a book that you read and could I read it? Or, I'm sorry to hear that, but you're still my son and we still love you. All right. So you want to have that soft answer of Proverbs 15:1. All right. The second thing you want to do is do your research. All right. You need to be trained. You know, when we're dealing with someone who has left the faith, Sunday school answers are not enough. They're going to be challenging you with questions about the existence of God, alleged injustices committed by Catholic priests, Catholic missionaries, all religions, Inquisition, Crusades, condoms in Africa, all sorts of things. You have to have a good answer, a solid answer. All right. They've done some research, and maybe they haven't done that much. Maybe they've only read one book. But that means you have to then read some books or get some training or join our institute that we're starting up at TaylorMarshall.com, the Taylor Marshall Institute. Think about it this way. If you had a loved one who came home and says, you know, I just found out I have this really bad allergy. I'm allergic to gluten. Well, a loving person would buy some books on it and learn about the gluten allergy and then be able to respond to it. Similarly, if someone you loved had a mental disorder, right? Let's say they had mild depression or clinical depression, or if they had schizophrenia or any of these maladies, you would take time to do the research. If they had a life-threatening disease or a certain form of cancer, the loving thing to do would be to do your research, to look into it. The same thing goes in when we have crises of faith. All right. If they leave the faith and become a Baptist, well, then you need to study that. Right. You need to buy some books on that. If they become a Lutheran, you need to learn about Lutheranism. If they become a Muslim, you need to learn about Islam. If they become an atheist, you need to do your research. You need to be versed in what you believe and understand where they are, and then the counter arguments. All right. Now, the third thing is to pray. All right, that sounds obvious. Of course, we're going to pray for them. But I'm serious. You must pray. And we think immediately of St. Monica. Her son, Augustine, was committing fornication. He was involved in a strange religious cult, the Manichees. He was living a dissolute life, and he was seeking after basically fame through rhetoric and public speaking and literature. There was just a lot of misguidance in the young Augustine's life. And she prayed every day with tears for her son's conversion. And not only did she get his conversion and his baptism, he became a priest, a bishop, a doctor of the church, arguably the greatest theologian of all time, not counting the apostles, and maybe Thomas Aquinas is debatable. I don't want to go there in this podcast. But the fact is, Monica's prayers achieved a great conversion. And I think God in his wisdom and his providence placed that example in the first few centuries of the church. You know, Augustine died in 430 AD. He placed that example because he knew within the church there would be children who strayed from the faith of their parents. And he gave this wonderful example of a mother. Through her tears, through her prayers, her wayward son became one of the greatest Christians of all time, one of the most prolific and influential theologians of all time, one of the greatest doctors of the church. So we must pray. And when you pray, call down the promises of God. When you pray, say, God, we baptized this baby. We dedicated this baby to you. You touched this child when he was an infant. You confirmed this child. You gave this child his or her first communion. The catechism was taught. We present this child to you, and we know that you want his salvation even more than we do. And in the name of Jesus, we ask for it. And you can even call down that wonderful promise in Proverbs 22, verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And say, God, we may not have been the best parents. We may not have catechized as best as we could. We may not have been the most perfect examples of what it means to be a Christian. But Lord, we ask that the path that he was set on as a young child, we ask that he persevere in it, even in this time of crisis. All right, so the third one's prayer. Just a bit of review. First one, listen more than you talk. Second, do your research. Know what you're talking about and know where they're coming from. Third, pray like St. Monica. And fourth, realize that conversion and even keeping your faith is highly dependent upon community. You know, we say community this and community that. It's an overused word in the American vocabulary. I know some of us are sick of hearing all about community, but if we go back to the Latin, community, it means united together. And when I was in college, a very wise man told me that being a Christian is like being a coal, an ember in the fire. If you've ever like done a barbecue or anything like that or a campfire, if you take the coals and you spread them out, they go out and they become cold. But if you take the embers and you pile them all together, they get hotter and they stay on fire much longer. And that's how we are with our faith. We need each other. You know, especially as Catholics, we believe in the church. Salvation is not just me and Jesus. Salvation is communicated from Jesus to me through a body of people called the church, the Catholic Church. We participate in Christ by being part of a global, universal community. Now, we're big on the global universal community, but we sometimes forget that we need local micro communities of faith. The religious movements of the Benedictines and the Cistercians and the Franciscans and the Dominicans and to movements up into our own day like Opus Dei and other groups are reminders that we need smaller groups to encourage one another for spiritual direction and to be united in our daily lives as people that are believers and that love God. And when it comes to people who have left the faith, they've left the church, what they need is that community experience. They need someone in their life, or hopefully several people, who continue to be light, continue to be salt. I'm reminded of a story. I won't share the name, but he was explaining to me that he left the faith in high school and didn't believe it. His family was very Catholic. All the kids were Catholic. And he abandoned it. But his brother continued to befriend him, continued to be gentle and talk to him about his own faith and what it was like for him to be a Christian, his own struggles, and was very honest. And that witness right there in his own family was the impetus, was the push that brought him back to the church. And that young man's now a Catholic priest and a very good one, I might say. And it's a reminder that our families, our little communities, right? Our groups in our churches, our small groups, we need that. And those who have fallen away need to experience that again. You know, the 12-step programs and anything for people who have addictions always includes a communal element, a group element, because scientists who are secular, they're not coming from a point of view of faith, have confirmed that people's behavior and beliefs change chiefly in groups, right? This is why peer pressure can be so dangerous for young people. And it goes all the way up until we're older. Our opinions and the way we see the world, the way we see life, the way we understand God is greatly affected by the people we're around, all right? So when we have people who have left the church, if there's any way for us to have them engage and be around people who are faithful and who are good examples, that might be what helps bring them back. So there it is, the 4-part plan. And I would love to hear your experiences, and I'm sure others would like to hear your experience as well, both the difficulties and pain in experiencing this, but also stories of hope and of encouragement of people coming back. And so I'd really like for any of you who have experiences that you'd like to share to go to the site, go to the show notes for episode 4, the 4-part plan for those who leave the church, and leave a comment. Share the good and the bad and the ugly, and we can learn from each other's experiences. So please do leave a comment. I look forward to seeing what you have to say and engaging with you there in the comment box. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Again, look for the Institute registration in the weeks to come. The first 500 will be admitted in the Institute for courses in philosophy and theology. And as always, we close with our Latin word of the week. And I love this word. The Latin word of the week is multiloquax. Multiloquax. And it means a person who talks a lot. So in the 4-part plan, we mentioned being slow to speak and quick to listen. Well, the opposite of that would be multiloquax. So if you're at a cocktail party, you want to use this. Let's say it's, you know, 3 people standing around and a person's just hogging the conversation and just talking, hardly taking a breath. And when they leave to go to the bathroom, you can look at one of your friends and say, you know, that guy's multiloquax. He talks way too much. Well, we're running out of time. So remember, our Lord Jesus Christ said that you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. So go out there and be salty.